Welcome, everyone. I'm Jacob Meyer.
And I'm Glenn Hill.
And today on Tactical Tennis, I'm recording next to an ice machine in Sarasota at the Challenger.
Nice.
Yeah. So apologies in advance for a little bit of background noise every now and then.
Yeah, but if you this hear is one any of cluttering or rumbling sounds in the back, that's just the ice dropping.
Let's hope. This is actually one of the best challengers on the tour, so it's kind of a fun one to go to. The guys that went down here do exceptionally well. It's pretty interesting. So today we want to talk more about what to do when your practice sucks so that your practice sucks less.
Right, because we did that podcast a few weeks back, and it was why your practice probably sucks. And we talked some, I think, about how to split the time up better in terms of what you're trying to spend the time on, which
yes.
is useful. But then what we didn't do yet was talk specifically about, well, look, that's great if we want to spend more time practicing serves, but how should serve practice really actually look in order to get the most out of it?
I think that the ideas of the previous podcast, if you didn't catch that one, are definitely worth chiming in on. Today, I know that you've spent a lot of time keeping up to date with the research on how to do things in a purposeful way and learn new skills in a sort of optimized manner.
Right, because who doesn't read neuroscience books before bed? Everybody does that, right?
Unfortunately, sometimes I actually do. But yeah, pretty much I think everyone that's cooler than us does not do that. So how can we apply this to it? I mean, let's talk about serving and practicing your serve. This
sure.
is one of the things we touched on in the podcast beforehand, that a lot of us for years just don't practice our serve enough. And there's a few people now, I think, that are thought leaders in tennis that are, you know, pointing out some of these obvious facts. But what do we do? We've decided, okay, 30% of my time I'm going to practice my serve. Now, what next?
Sure. I think it's important to note, too, that the ideas we're about to talk about are applicable to any skill related to tennis, and in fact, really any physical skill. We're really talking about the science of better quality practice. Because obviously the point of practice is getting better, and one of the things that unfortunately most people do when they quote-unquote practice is actually go out and essentially rehearse skills that they already have. You know,
yeah, that's a good way of saying it.
They're not really actually getting functionally better at the sport. Like, they're not expanding their limits. And if we really want to actually improve at tennis or any other endeavor in our lives, you know, you have to actually functionally, like fundamentally get better at the thing that you're trying to do. And you can't do that by repeating things that you already know how to do.
If I'm, say, hitting in a way and I'm trying to do it better, then is that rehearsing something I already know? Or,
well, I think that there's a big difference between, quote unquote, trying to do something better versus actually looking at the science that we have about how people learn, and mm-hmm. or especially when it comes to practice, how people who reach elite levels in things tend to practice and how they should practice. So even if we take somebody who's mediocre or great, when it comes to the specific time that we spend practicing, how to optimize that and get better at a specific skill in the fastest way possible. Get the most improvement in the least amount of time. And there's some really good research out there, actually. There's a Swede by the name of Anders Ericsson who wrote an interesting book called Peak, which I would recommend to anybody out there who's interested in delving into this topic deeper. But the idea is that the way that we practice obviously has a massive impact on the way we specifically practice a skill has a massive impact on our ability to get better at a skill. So when we talk about that, one of the key elements is the first step, I guess. Like if we look at this as kind of there's multiple things that you have to do, and you have to do all of them in order to get the most out of it. The first mm-hmm. thing is actually picking a very specific skill and practicing something very specific. So if we were to take serving as an example, well, practicing serving isn't actually specific enough. That's kind of the general idea of serving, great. But when we look at serving, there's lots of little sub-skills in the art of serving. So
wait, so can't I just go out and say I'm practicing my serve on the deuce side And I'm just practicing my surf. So I'm going to do, like, this is what all the guys at the Challenger do this week. I'm going to hit some up the tee, some out wide, and then maybe some through the middle, like a quote-unquote body surf.
And the question I would ask you is, when you watch these guys practicing like this, how many of them, when you see them year after year and month after month, actually getting better at serving?
Well, so that's a great question. I had another coach pose that to me a week or two ago. And the truth is that if you look, say, over a period of 1 year, like a year of playing all the time and doing this probably 5 days a week, they almost don't get better at all. But I'll say this, that if you look at guys that have been out there for like 6 or 7 years, they get better. So
right, over the course of 6 or 7 years, they improve.
Over the course of 6 or 7 years, they get better. So it's hard for us to pinpoint, well, where did they get better? I mean, I've always felt like, I mean, it shouldn't take you 5 years to get better.
Better at serving, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And importantly, in there as well, as a lot of these people that we probably do see get better over the course of 6 or 7 years, we're talking about them improving their serving from the time they're 19 until, you know, over the course of 6, 7 years until they're in their mid-20s. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which
yeah.
would be kind of a normal thing to have happen anyway, even if you don't actually have any real technical improvements, just from a neurological perspective of having practiced the skill so many times, even in a suboptimal way, we're still just going to get better at it because we just do it so much. Right.
Yeah.
And we're so young, we still haven't actually really mastered the skill at the level that we're capable of. So, you know, but the bigger picture here is like, let's improve what we're capable of. Right. And so the first thing is picking a very specific skill, and no, like, I'm going to serve on the deuce court isn't specific enough. And no, I'm going to just hit some serves down the tee and then, you know, some body serves and then some wide serves is also not really actually specific enough, because the second important part of picking a specific skill set to practice is doing so in a way where we actually can measure our performance. So, you know, you have to think about this. If I don't have a way to actually get feedback on what I'm doing, then how can I improve? Like, if I told a player, look, I want you to hit serves up the tee, but let's just say that we somehow magically were able to put an opaque surface, like something you couldn't see through, where the ball could pass through, but you couldn't see where the ball bounced. You know, it's going to be very hard for that player to improve his aim, right? If he's just hitting serves, quote unquote, up the tee, but he doesn't know where they're bouncing.
Okay, so like if you're essentially like blindfolded somehow, you can
right.
see the ball, but you can't see where it goes.
You can't see where it bounces, right? I mean, your feedback is non-existent. So you literally have no way of
yeah.
knowing what's going on, and then it's very, very hard to improve it.
Yeah.
Right?
That's going to be really tough.
Yeah, and so what happens is the way most people practice is they actually go out and practice in such a way where they do get some level of feedback, but the quality of that feedback is really poor. So they say, well, I'm going to hit a T-serve. And that's good, right? It's good to practice your T-serve. But then there's this kind of general area where it's like, well, that was in, and it was fast, and it was in the T direction, so that was a good one. And, oh,
right,
that
yeah.
was that was out, so that was a bad one. And the feedback's very general. Like, it's very binary in terms of it was either just good or bad, and the criteria is very vague of what
okay.
really constitutes a good and a bad serve.
I got to interrupt you there because
sure.
I never thought of this as being binary, but literally everyone who plays at Challengers, I mean, we're talking like main draw Challenger players. So these are like really, really high level tennis players. I mean, these guys are really good, but they all are making a binary judgment. They're all, it's either good or it was bad.
Right. That was a good one. That was a bad one, right?
Exactly.
And that's it.
I hear it constantly. I mean, hours every day.
Yeah. And so this is where it gets interesting, because if the quality of my feedback is low, then the quality of my improvement will also be low. Because I'm not getting a very refined feedback, it's hard to refine my technique and refine my performance. So the second part of it – oh, go ahead.
So it sounds like the idea is that almost as if I don't know how to get better if I don't have good judgments that are more than just, well, it was a good one or it was a bad one, that I need like more information to inform what I'm going to do next to sort of improve my level.
Yeah. Well, so this is the thing, right? If I am going to go out there and make poor feedback which is basically this binary of it's good or it's bad, then sure, I can still get better, but it might take me 7 years, right? And if I want to get better a lot faster, then I have to improve the quality of my feedback. And so the way that I do that is by restricting and limiting and making my goal much more specific. So instead of saying I'm going to – and, you know, one of the things I think is a really great example on this is instead of talking about the T-serve, let's talk about the wide serve on the deuce court, okay?
Oh, that's perfect because I actually practiced that serve for – I think I practiced that serve for 7 or 8 years and actually – it basically didn't improve. I mean, it improved, I guess, but it was like I didn't have that serve. It was just awful.
Yeah, and when you look at the guys, not just on the Challenger Tour, but on the ATP Tour, there's a lot of guys that have a very limited serving set. Like they can hit some serves very well and some serves quite poorly, and they just kind of adapt. You know, they don't really improve those very specific serves. So if we talk about the wide serve on the deuce court, and I like this one just because I think there's it's easier to highlight some of the advantages of being more specific in your practice. Instead of just trying to hit wide serves and saying, oh, that one was in and it was wide, so that was good, and oh, that one was in but it wasn't wide, so it was bad, or it was out, so it was bad, we can instead say, well, look, I'm going to not just try to hit a wide serve, I'm going to aim for a very specific area. And this is where things get very interesting, right? Because one of the things that we want to do is not just aim for a specific area, but the area, the size of this area, or the difficulty of the target has to be appropriate for our current skill level. And the obvious question so there, like, is what's appropriate, right?
Yeah, so I remember when I was like 23, I wanted to hit like aces out wide on the deuce. I was like, I'm going to work on my slicer out wide. And I think like Andy Roddick was, you know, like really good back then. So it was like, I'm going to hit it like him, right? So I'm going for these aces. I didn't hit very many of them.
You know, maybe the fact that you're not Andy Roddick tall didn't help you. But sorry, it's a fact of life. He's taller than you are. I'm sorry. So one of the things that we want to do is make the target size appropriate, or the target difficulty really appropriate for our current skill level. So what I don't want to do is, let's just say that I am a, you know, ATP level, you know, Roger Federer server, just to pick like the absurd example, because obviously Roger's one of the best, most precise servers that we've seen. You know, for him to go out there and say, well, I'm going to try and hit my wide serve in an area that's 1 meter, like 3 feet wide, that's not an appropriate target, because he can go out and do that over and over and over again, right? There's no challenge in that for him. That would be an example of rehearsing a skill that he already has. And likewise, if I'm a recreational player who plays tennis 2 times a week, going out and trying to hit a silver dollar is not appropriate either, because I'm just never going to hit that target. Or if I do hit that target, it's largely a result of luck, not because of a refined skill, right? So the idea is we need to pick a target that gives us an appropriate success failure rate. And when we think about what that would look like, ideally we're looking at something where we can be successful about 30 to 50% of the time. And look, you've got a little bit of wiggle room here. Like if you're being successful 60% of the time, it doesn't mean that you go run and jump off a cliff because you failed at life. Like it's okay to have a little bit of wiggle, right? I think just far enough. But so somewhere around that 30 to 50, 60% range of success. But it's important actually that you're doing something where you fail often enough too, right?
Okay, so this one's good because I'm working with these guys here. And they, I mean, they're so good, right? But a lot of them have been ingrained with this idea that you just can't miss. You just don't miss. So, I mean, they can hit, you know, 400 balls back and forth hard in a practice without making an error. But they can't really push their limits doing that, because obviously you can't hit 400 shots and push your limits.
Right.
So, you know, I'm constantly driving them to say, look, like, make the mistakes. It's fine. Just make sure that you're doing stuff that's going to make you a better player. So when they're practicing their serve, I don't want them to make every serve.
No. You know,
but they want to literally make every single serve.
Well, that would be fine if every single serve was so good that it's just never coming back. Right, because that would be
that is not the case.
Well, obviously, right? Yeah. So you've got to be able to fail, because here's the thing, right? if I don't set an objective that I actually fail at, then I'm not going to get meaningful feedback, right? I have to be able to differentiate. The goal is, look, I want to set it to something that's challenging, something that I can't currently do consistently. I have to be able to do it often enough to be able to say, oh, yeah, you know what, like roughly half or a third of the time I'm doing it right, so I know what right feels like. But also I'm failing often enough with feedback that I can know what wrong feels like too and differentiate between the two and start to refine my understanding of not just when I go wrong, oh, that's bad, but it's more like, okay, I was serving for a disc that's placed right on the, you know, the sideline in the service box up, you know, 30 centimeters or a foot from the service line. Mm-hmm. And I'm either, you know, maybe I'm hitting it, maybe I'm missing by 3 inches to the left or 3 inches to the right or 5 inches deep or 2 inches short. And that's specific mm-hmm. feedback that tells me, okay, when I hit it to the left, it feels like this. And when I hit it to the right, it feels like that. When I hit it right where I want to, it feels like this. And the important part of being successful enough is being able to feel when it feels right and have enough success to actually get a solid idea of what that feels like, and also to know what failure feels like and be able to differentiate and get the feedback of, oh, when I failed in this way and that's what that felt like, to be able to make those corrections.
Okay, so what you just described is what I refer to as calibration with the guys that I work with, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, you have to know, okay, if I just missed it 6 inches to the left, you have to know how to do it again, but make it go 6 inches to the right, because then you're hitting the target.
Yeah, absolutely, right? So now, so you have to stretch yourself. You have to be, if you want to become more skilled, you know, there's this idea of aim small, miss small. So if I aim at a small target, I'll learn to miss in small ways.
Okay, so that's going to bring up this idea of big targets. But before we get to that, I want to talk about calibrating and having this meaningful feedback. It seems to me that even if someone's practicing with exactly the target that you described, where it's 30 centimeters or a foot up of the corner of the service box, serving out wide on the deuce side, I mean, tons of coaches are going to have someone aim for that spot, okay?
Sure.
But it seems to me that the player has to have in their mind that these ideas, that they're looking, okay, I missed to the left, so now I'm going to adjust it to the right, or I missed it short, so now I'm going to hit it harder. And it seems to me that the coach has to have those as well.
Yes.
I mean, the coach can't just keep saying, hit the target, hit the target, hit the target, hit the target.
Right. The coach should be giving them better feedback than they can actually see themselves, because, you know, they're obviously in the middle of a service motion when they're hitting. And
right,
so, in the aftermath of a service motion. So the coach should be able to stand there and actually give them a better feedback. But then we come – this brings us perfectly to the third final piece of what Eric Anderson calls deliberate practice, which mm-hmm. is the first piece obviously is we practice a very specific skill. The second piece is we practice it with an appropriate level of challenge such that we are successful some of the time but not too often. Because okay. the third important piece is I have to be able to fail at this. Like, it has to be challenging enough that I'm failing at it mm-hmm. often enough that I can get feedback. And the last piece of the puzzle is doing all of this, ideally, in the presence of somebody who can give you the right feedback and the right correction to be able to fix what you're doing wrong.
Okay. So this is where I want to distill this a little further. There's a lot of different ways, obviously, that people coach. But one of the things that jumps out to me is a lot of coaches will say, watch a player hit that serve. And let's just say they miss it short and to the right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They're then going to say like, oh, you know, you need to do something different with your arm, or your toss was in the wrong place or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's going to be the correction. Is that enough, or do they need to tie those things together and say, hey, your toss was in the wrong place, so it made you hit the ball short because, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, that depends, one, on how good the coach is, right? Whether or not they have the knowledge base to actually be able to tie all that stuff together well. And the second part of it is kind of a bigger philosophical question here is, you know, as a coach, one of the things that I always try to do with the people that I work with is I want to give them enough knowledge that they can help themselves, right? The better somebody's understanding is, like, if they're going out there and they're making that same mistake in the middle of a match, I want them to understand why so that they can kind of fill in the gaps. You know, I think that probably for most people, not having that specific knowledge of why, you know, do X, like, you know, let's just say fix the toss position. They might not necessarily need to know why that's going to make them better, as long as they understand what it is that they need to do differently. And I think that's not necessarily going to increase the quality of that particular practice. But when we look in the bigger picture of people's development as a player and their understanding of the game, well, this comes back to bigger stuff, right? So if I can help my player understand why that toss position affected the serve in that way, then not even just for themselves, when they're playing a match and they're in a warm-up and they notice something about the toss of their opponent, they can get a better understanding of what their opponent can and cannot do with their serve based on, you know, something that maybe is right or wrong with their toss. And that has a whole trickle-down effect on everything they do.
Okay, so you know me. I'm a big-time student of movement of all different kinds. And so I'm really into the biomechanics of this stuff. But this is a real question in my mind, like something that I'm trying to sort out. I try and coach with essentially as little information as I can.
You might need to expand on that.
In the sense that I come from a place where I was very academic, and I remember as a very young coach, like as I was teaching in college, you know, I mean, this is years ago, but, you know, teaching people in college, when people first started approaching me and asking me for lessons, I mean, looking back, I would just like talk for, you know, hours and just tell them, like, it was like a brain dump. And that's not an effective way to communicate to people. And it's not an effective way to actually get them to do the skills that they need to do or that they want to do.
I mean, it's about giving them enough to do what they, you know, to get the most out of the time.
Right. So I want to get to just enough to get them to do it. And then, I mean, to me, like realistically, as someone that studies movement on a daily basis, if I feel like a player needs to understand the quote unquote why, it's oftentimes a lot better to do that not on the court.
Sure. Well, but you're also working with people in a different environment than probably most of our listeners will be practicing. You know,
sure,
most of them aren't going to pay their coach to sit down, you know, outside of their actual lesson and talk about the whys with them.
Yeah. Well, the truth is, I used to just do that for free when I was just doing, you know, regular lessons and country club stuff and whatever. But anyway, so the point being that I wonder, and I want to know what your take is on this and what Anders' take would be theoretically, you know, is it better to give them that extra information to say, like, this technical thing is influencing the trajectory or the flight of the ball? Or is it better just to say, hey, you missed short and to the right. Now you have to figure out how to make the ball go further and make it go more to the left, because that's going to get you closer to your target.
I think that that's going to depend largely on the teacher and the student, because everybody communicates differently. If you have a good and deep enough understanding to be able to explain that to somebody in a few seconds, I think there's no harm in doing so. For some people, though, for some people, there is harm in doing so, because then they start thinking about, you know, the wrong things or
stuff. Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you just have to know who you're working with, or in this case, you know, for most of the people listening, probably know yourself. You know, does it help you to know that little piece of information or not? You know, that's important, I think, to figure out on an individual basis. But when we look at the bigger picture here, for most people, it's more just the idea of, look, if we get those three big pieces of the puzzle in place, then that's the critical thing that has to happen for you to maximize your practice time. You have something to say.
I do, yeah. Because one thing that it has become clear to me over the years is that no matter who we are, the way that we're going to play the game is really going to be based on feeling. And what I mean by that is the way that I remember how to serve out wide on the deuce side is by how it feels, not by, you know, going over 52 steps in my head. I mean, I have cues that I will use to remind myself to do certain things that are helpful, mm-hmm. but ultimately it's a feeling that our brain really processes. It's a feeling that we recall and then say, okay, now my body knows how to do that thing and knows how to do that movement and knows how to hit that serve.
You sound like you're describing kind of a kinesthetic memory, so to speak.
Yeah.
Like a physical feeling, like a physical memory of this is how the right serve feels.
And I mean, that's how we do really everything when it comes to tennis, as far as hitting the ball goes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I just want to point this out, because now I'm going to ask you to tell me what the three things were again, because I'm not sure that I actually remember them accurately.
Well, so the three things were, number one, you have to practice a very specific skill. It's not enough to go out and practice serving. It's not enough to go out practicing serving on, wide on the deuce court. Go out and practice serving to a particular space or area that's wide on the deuce court. Number two is practicing that skill in a way that's challenging, such that you are successful some of the time, but not all of the time. But you also don't fail all of the time. Or none of the time, right? So you want to be successful, or a skill that you can be successful somewhere in kind of in the 30 to 60% of the time range. And the goal would be obviously to increase the number of times that I can be successful. There's got to be something that we can measure, that we can see, and do so in a way that we get good quality feedback on what's going on, right? I'm missing in this direction by this much. And the third part of the puzzle, which is important, is to do so in the presence of somebody who can give you meaningful feedback on the mistakes that you're making. Sometimes for some people that could be themselves in the right situation if they had the right knowledge and understanding. Mm-hmm. And sometimes not. It's important to understand that even without that third piece of the puzzle, you're still better off practicing this way with steps one and two than you are just going out and doing it kind of the old-fashioned way that most people actually practice their skills. You will get more out of your practice even without having a third party present who's giving you correction as you go.
This is one of the things that has come up over the years with some of my friends, is that no matter how good anyone gets, whether it's you or whether it's me or whether it's one of these pros, I mean, the best guys still benefit from having a quote unquote a coach around. And the key being, I think, that extra feedback.
Sure. I mean, it makes a difference. It has a positive impact. There's no doubt about that. It's just a matter of whether or not you have access to that at any given moment. And most people aren't going to be able to practice and have somebody watching all their practice sessions. That's not a realistic possibility for the average person playing tennis.
Right.
They're just not going to want to, for
most of our lives either.
Right. They're not going to want to or be able to invest that much money into their practice sessions. But when you have the opportunity to have that happen, obviously have it happen. And when you don't, then at least you can still fulfill steps one and two and do a mediocre job of filling in number three yourself is still going to be better than not going through this process at all. And that's really the way that we can go out and practice in the most efficient and productive way possible when it comes to the physical skills practice of tennis. It's just so important that you're out there challenging yourself on a regular basis. Don't go out and do the things you already know how to do well. Push the edge. Try to find that little extra 2 or 3 or 4% every time to make you that little bit better and differentiate yourself from your peers.
And learn how to push your limits in a way that's really productive, that gets you better. So you're better the next day, not so that you just push your limits like I did when I was first coming up, where I just was like, well, I'm not that good, but I didn't actually get any better from my practice.
Right, because if you're going out there and you're pushing limits too far and you're not being successful at all, you don't get meaningful. I mean, if I can be successful 1 out of 100 times, I'm not going to really be able to say, oh, that 1 out of 100, I know exactly what that felt like. Let me do that again and over again. You're going to be like, oh, wow, that serve was great. I wonder why, and then proceed to hit 99 bad serves again, you know? We've got to be able to, you've got to know your limits and then be constantly adjusting them. This is the thing, and this is the hard part about really practicing in a deliberate fashion, is you can't rest on your laurels, you can't get complacent. You have to constantly be pushing those boundaries to get the most out of it. So the thing is, once, if I put a 3-foot wide disc out there and I'm hitting those serves and I'm hitting my target, once I get pretty good at that and I'm making it 70-80% of the time, well, guess what? It's time to shrink that circle and make it smaller.
Right.
And then again, I got to go back to being comfortable with that failing half the time, and then make it smaller again and smaller again. You know, if I'm not failing half the time, roughly, then I'm not really actually going to be pushing myself in the way that's going to make me the best that I can possibly be.
All right. Well, I want to wrap this up here in a minute, because this has been really helpful for me. You've put a really solid structure and reasoning behind things that I've been doing for a long time, but I didn't have this, you know, 1-2-3 stepwise structure of it. And it makes really, really good sense. So thank you for that, because it's just, you know, it's cool to learn stuff.
No, absolutely. I was absolutely thrilled when I found, you know, Anders Ericsson's work, because this guy is the leading expert and researcher in the world on essentially practice. And some of the body of work that he has is, and the people that he's worked with, is pretty impressive stuff. And it's really interesting. So again, for people listening, Peak is the name of the book. Anders Ericsson, by all means, go on and read it. I think, you know, there's a lot to learn there. But yeah, I think that's probably a good wrapping up point.
Yeah, I actually ordered it during this recording.
So. Good to hear that you're focused. But
by the time anyone listens to this, I'll probably have read it. But is there anything else that we need to wrap this up? I mean, this definitely takes us from beyond, hey, you're not doing that good of a job to practicing, to, okay, now I have some real concrete stuff that we can focus on so that I can still build in the things that I've been trying to do in the past, but I can do them a lot better.
Right. I mean, I think that the only thing left is emails from you guys and girls out there to ask questions and let us know what you want to know more about, because, you know, ultimately we're doing this for you, and the more that you interact with us and let us know what you found helpful and what you need to get more clarification on or what you're struggling with, you know, believe me, we read every single email that comes in. So shoot us an email and start that conversation. And we're happy to help. So you can reach me at Glenn with one N, just GLEN at tactical.tennis.
I'm Jacob at tactical.tennis.
And, you know, also, obviously, follow us on Facebook. The podcast is now on, you know, Android with Google, and also, obviously, on iTunes. And, you know, we'd love to hear from you folks. So have a good afternoon. It's 9:30 at night here, and I don't know what time you'll be listening, but whatever time of day it is that you listen to this, have a great day. Keep playing this wonderful sport, and we'll hope to hear from you.
Excellent sign off. Can't wait to hear about that one.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, I've been working on my sign offs lately. I obviously haven't been doing directed practice at it though, so, or deliberate practice. So
yeah.
I gotta go to the drawing board and get specific.
Anyways, to keep in mind.
Yes, always. All right. Signing off there.
Cheers.
Bye.
Guys.
Bye.